Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like scrolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you get at the store, like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
All right, we just mentioned Jadeveon Clowney got cut by the Carolina Panthers. Man, if someone had told you back when they drafted him a decade ago with the number one overall pick, generational talent Jadeveon Clowney, that he would wind up being... I would say, and he may wind up somewhere else here, Carolina cut it for salary cap reasons. He can still play.
Oh, yeah. He's still a very, I want to say productive football player, but the problem with Clowney is that he's a classic guy where his production is disruption.
Yeah.
And it doesn't end up in double-digit sacks very often or whatnot. But he's, and this is why I bring him up with Jalen Green, it's that you just got to let go of where their draft position was and whatever their physical ability was. Yeah. Like, Jadeveon Clowney is still a very good football player. Mm-hmm. It's just that he's never going to live up to the expectations of being a number two overall pick.
Right.
And like Jalen Green, it doesn't have to be, no, he's trash, or yes, he's a superstar. It's likely somewhere in the middle, mm-hmm. but on the upper end of that. And if you let go of your previous expectations, you got to acknowledge he's still very, very good at what he does.
It's hard to do. For whatever reason, that label is hard to shake, you know?
Well, especially because Clowney's so freakishly gifted in some regards people are always going to feel like it's like he's not living up to his expectations. But for the type of player he is, a guy that can disrupt the run to an extreme degree, who can get pressure on the quarterback, he just has a hard time actually finishing the deal.
Yeah.
He's very valuable. I don't know if he's necessarily the... On Sundays, he has a swarm mentality.
Yeah.
I don't know about his Monday through Saturday swarm mentality.
It's kind of a prerequisite to be on this iteration of the Texans.
Yeah. But he's also, you got to remember, he's also several years older than, when was the trade to the Seahawks?
That was 2019. It was August 31st, 2019.
Yeah, so he's 6 years older. I would be surprised if the Texans, I mean, even if you separate any of that from it, they've got a bunch of veteran defensive linemen already. They've got at least, I think, four guys in their 30s on the defensive line. So it's probably, unless it's in a Carmelo Anthony type of deal with the Rockets.
Just
a total hometown discount.
And I say hometown discount. He had a house here as recently as a couple years ago, I think, Clowney, if I'm not mistaken. I wonder if he still has a house here or not. I have no idea.
And he probably knows D'Amico. For sure, because D'Amico's last year here was 2011.
They missed each other by a couple of years.
But D'Amico still had his house here.
Yeah,
and,
D'Amico knows everybody. Yeah.
D'Amico is probably probably knows him a little bit. I bet they'll probably have a conversation.
I would be all for it. He can still play. It's not my job to monitor his swarm factor from Monday through Saturday. You know, like
no,
I,
and especially right, and especially on Sundays, like some of Clowney's best plays are him hawking a wide receiver 40 yards downfield.
Yes.
He hustles his ass off on the field.
Did Bill O'Brien ultimately win the war on that trade with Clowney, considering that once he left here, he's become like a deluxe-level journeyman for the most part? He became like a one-year soldier of fortune in a bunch of places?
I'd say a blanket no, just because they still... And I don't blame just Bill O'Brien for that. I would put Brian Gain into it as well.
Yeah.
The way they handled that entire offseason, they could have gotten more for him. And his production up to that point, including that year before he got traded. Remember, that was the year that the Chiefs traded a pretty high pick.
It was Frank Clark. It was Frank Clark.
And remember this, and they had basically...
With the Seahawks of all teams.
The Seahawks basically put it out there to the league that, Frank Clark is available.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs traded for Frank Clark. The story that came out later was that the Chiefs, as well as many other teams, didn't even know that Clowney would have been available.
Right.
And that was that same year. And now that was Brian Gaine as the GM at the point, and that Brian Gaine gets fired... And then O'Brien takes over.
Yep.
And then remember, it was so ham-handed. Remember, they basically tried to dupe Clowney into coming in and signing the franchise tag tender when, they also had a deal in place to trade Clowney to the Dolphins.
Right.
And they were like, hey, just come on in and talk.
Yeah.
Just sign the deal. Yeah. And Clowney, to his credit, was like, wait a second. So he bravehearted it. He was like, no, I can smell an ambush.
Right.
I'm not just going to come in and just sign this. So I'm going to have a say in where I go.
Picture an O'Brien being like, hey, can I get your autograph?
Yeah.
Just like with, he's got like a blank sheet of paper over the contract part. Like, hey, I'd love to get an autograph for my kid,
We don't need to get your agent involved in this. This is no big deal.
Right. To Bill. Yeah.
The problem, too, is and you could do this with the Hopkins trade. Any one of those deals that he made or any of those contracts that he gave on renegotiations or anything, individually in a vacuum, you can look at it and say, okay, I can see how it makes sense.
Yeah.
The problem was you had so many of those deals that you had to finagle your way into rationalizing it.
Yeah.
That there was the sum total of all of it. It was losing out on the margins or big time on all of those trades that turned it into a disaster.
Yep. That was a busy day that day, man. The Tunsil trade. The Clowney trade, the Carlos Hyde trade. They had like three or four trades, and I called it Swap Meet Saturday. They had like three or four trades in that one day. That was crazy. Right before the season started. the worst, like the times where you've got like the highest, energy on a trade like that would be right before the draft or right before the trade deadline. O'Brien does those trades on August 31st.
Yeah.
and gets destroyed on the Tunsil trade, and then like on the other end where he's getting the picks, he gets a third round pick.
Well, and even with the Seahawks deal, remember it felt like at the very, it just had the feel of one of those deals where at the end the Seahawks said, well, you know what, we'd actually like a little bit extra. It felt a little bit like Kevin Costner in draft
David Putney. Give me David
Ironically
Putney.
Enough, with the Seahawks,
yes.
Where he said he threw in the kicker just because he felt like
Give me David Putney. I got to improve my special teams. Yeah.
Except the Seahawks were doing that to Bill O'Brien.
Right.
Listen, you know what? Actually, you're going to pay $8 million
half
of his salary.
Also. They paid half the salary, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. Let's not relive that anymore. Speaking of trades, the NFL.com has a list here. Tom Blair has a list of the 11 traded players who have the biggest impact on the 2025 NFL season. So these are guys who got traded in the offseason somewhere else. And the Texans are front and center on three of these 11 guys on this list, either sending them out or getting them back. Number two on the list, Seth, Laremy Tunsil, Washington Commanders.
Ooh.
Yeah. A year ago, Tunsil was on a Texans team that had been catapulted to relevance by a stunning rookie success of a former number two overall pick at quarterback. He has to be feeling a strong sense of deja vu, though the Commanders must be hoping it's not too strong given the way that Houston stumbled in C.J. Stroud's second pro season. Mm-hmm. One thing working in Washington's favor, their willingness to pour resources into giving Jaden Daniels the support he needs to work his magic. I will point out the Texans did that too. It just didn't work. They poured plenty of resources into trading for Diggs, and they had the most invested in their offensive line and everything
Washington's been pretty aggressive with the offensive line, including they went and drafted Josh Connerly.
They did.
In the first round as well, a guy that the Texans reportedly had their eyes on. So, I don't hate this. I think that's smart to put him there. If Jaden Daniels can get more time, and I think the really big question is, Cliff Kingsbury, typically his offenses kind of ebb and flow, and they'll show a lot of promise, but then people get dialed in on what exactly he's trying to do, and it starts to lose its luster. Mm-hmm. So does that happen in year two for Cliff Kingsbury? I'm I'm actually, on behalf of Kingsbury, I'm kind of, I guess optimistic would be the word. I think him as a full...
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Full-time offensive coordinator might be just exactly the thing he needed to do.
Oh, yeah. He didn't have all that other stuff on his plate. He can stay ahead of the game a little bit.
Right. Like, yeah. He's genuine. Like, he's had very few winning seasons as a head football coach.
Anywhere.
When he got the job, he had very few winning seasons as a head football coach. Yeah. So I think, him really, like, just having nothing but offense to think about, and then having a quarterback like Jaden Daniels, it was a smart move for them to take Laremy Tunsil.
Just for some context here, number one on this list, the traded players in order, the impact they're going to have is Geno Smith. A quarterback gets traded, you know, that's going to have high impact just by definition of the position. Geno Smith's number one, Laremy Tunsil's number two. I'll skip down here to the next Texan on the list, because you got a couple receivers here. Three in a row receivers at 5, 6, and 7 on the list. Pickens, Metcalf, and Deebo Samuel at 7. And then at number 9 on the list, CJ Gardner-Johnson, who they go with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson on the list here. They didn't go with the old CJ. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Traded for Kenyon Green. And they say this: this seems like one of the ideal ways to use the trade market, scooping up a useful defender who, to hear Howie Roseman tell it, GM of the Eagles, would still be starting in Philadelphia if not for a salary cap crunch. Gardner-Johnson was credited by Next Gen Stats with allowing the most touchdown catches among safeties with 30-plus coverage snaps. But he also finished in the top 17 in that group in passer rating allowed and EPA when targeted. He should slide nicely into a secondary that helped Houston rank 6th against the pass with his ball-hawking abilities. He did have 6 picks last year. And they talk about how he's going to compliment all the young guys in the secondary.
I meant to bring that up yesterday when we were talking about how the Texans' defense, they're 97% of their snaps. They're really, really good. Somehow they have the 6th-ranked passing defense by yardage, but then also allowed a boatload of passing touchdowns, especially deep balls. So it's the consistency that matters. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, by the way, he played last year, plays a lot like the Texans defense played last year.
I was going to say, fit right in like a glove.
Really good at creating turnovers and everything, but like, can we just clean up a few things on the back end on some of the gaffes and some of the mistakes? And so he's not the remedy for that. I think by and large that's on coaching and getting a lot of the younger guys to play better.
Yeah.
But the Texans, I will be very surprised if the Texans again this year don't force a lot of turnovers, and if they're not a very opportunistic defense in terms of they make a lot of plays behind the line of scrimmage, a lot of sacks, a lot of TFLs and all of that. They just got to clean up some of the stuff on the back end.
I like that Blair points out the way in which they got CJ Gardner-Johnson, because we're about to talk about Christian Kirk. He was 11th on this list. They picked him up in a similar fashion, but just highlighting the fact that this does seem to be kind of a wrinkle in the marketplace, that if you're talking to enough other GMs, and I think Nick talks to a lot of people a lot. He even joked about, you know, getting calls at 1 a.m. the other day about free agency and whatnot. But I think when you are, because you just brought up Brian Gaines' name a few minutes ago, he seemed to be in his 1.5 years as GM the complete opposite of that. Didn't make any trades. Never moved around in the draft. Like, was just the guy.
Did he ever make a draft day trade? Didn't make
a single draft day trade. Not one.
Yeah. Exact opposite of Nick.
And I think when you're that plugged in, you get these opportunities to get Joe Mixon for a 7th-round pick, to get C.J. Gardner-Johnson on the cheap. Christian Kirk's another one, finishes 11th on this list. They got him. Now, you got to be willing to inherit the contract, too. We should highlight that. There's a reason these guys are getting let go, and it's not because of their level of play. It's because of what their salary is. So if you're willing to pay the contract, which, you know, C.J. Gardner-Johnson is not cheap. He's $9.5 million a year. Christian Kirk was $16 million for this year, you know?
I think you pointing out the difference between Nick and Brian Gain is probably, that is really, really important. Because with the Laremy Tunsil trade, I think that there were probably many other opportunities or situations where the Texans could have or would have traded Laremy Tunsil before they eventually did, but the price just wasn't right.
Yep.
But eventually the scenario comes around where, okay, it works out this time. And we've seen from Nick in the past, as it was with Deshaun Watson, Nick could have traded Deshaun Watson many, many times before he eventually and finally did. I am on record as saying I would have caved to the pressure and bailed for much less than they got him
for
given all of the uncertainty around the situation.
Yep.
So I think that he's not afraid to just sit and wait until the right trade is there.
Yep. Agreed. Here's what they say about Christian Kirk, who, by the way, so the Texans are heavily involved in this list. Three of the 11 players they highlight on this most impactful traded players are at least being sent out by the Texans or brought back by the Texans. Damn, I have my Christian Kirk thing pulled up here, and I lost
for this
it.
Final spot, I considered a handful of options, including new Eagles guard Kenyon Green.
He did consider
new Cowboys quarterback Joe Milton, or new defensive Saints defensive tackle Devon, however you pronounce it.
Godshow. Or Ed Ingram. Ed Ingram on the list for the Texans. So we're kind of at the bottom end of the traded players here. But he talks about, based on the criteria of this list, I had to give the nod to Kirk, who should spend plenty of time with the ball in his hands, as what Coach D'Amico Ryan's term, quote, a friendly target for C.J. Stroud. So there you go. And a whole lot of other
it's
stuff.
It's good that he's friendly.
I like that he's
friendly. I don't want to be an unfriendly target.
Good golfer, too, I learned on a video from the Texans yesterday. They had the video from the golf tournament on Monday, and the big question for all the Texans players there was, who's the best golfer on the team? A lot of people said Christian Kirk can
That's
swing.
It's a notable achievement for a non-quarterback.
Yes.
Typically, it's those two positions that dominate.
Well, and Kaimi probably won the poll amongst people. But Christian Kirk got a few votes.
The thing about Kirk that's interesting is that he's been, when he first got to Jacksonville, he ended up having the most productive season of his career. And I think that was the first time he got over 1,000 yards. Then the next year, they had Calvin Ridley off of suspension. He becomes the focal point. The next year after that, they draft Brian Thomas, and he becomes the focal point. Christian Kirk has dealt with injuries the last couple of years, so it wasn't a perfect scenario. And all along the way, Trevor Lawrence is the guy throwing him the football.
Yeah.
So I'm not sitting here saying Christian Kirk is an all-pro, but there is a lot of upside there. I think that you haven't seen the best version or situation for Christian Kirk over the last couple of years, and that includes his own. The injuries are a factor, but I think he's been one of the most unheralded moves of the offseason compared to his potential impact on the team. I do think people are sleeping on Christian Kirk a little bit.
Oh yeah,
like people were going to the draft acting like the Texans don't have a slot receiver at all. And I'm watching old Christian Kirk film, and I'm like, I like Christian Kirk. Is that okay?
Well,
I like him.
No Tank and Diggs is gone. That's a big target vacuum to fill. You know, Nico's going to get the lion's share of the targets, but they're going to throw the football. You know,
just simply, you don't keep a guy on the team just because he's a mentor, but I think he's a guy who's going to be productive. And the Jalen Knoll as a rookie has a whole lot of upside, but playing slot receiver, as we've discussed before, it's one of the harder mental challenges, and it's one of the positions that requires the most veteran savvy.
Yeah.
It's really hard for a rookie to just step in and learn it on his own, so it's really nice to have a guy, a veteran guy who could be an impact player, playing alongside of you or in front of you.
Hey, speaking of Trevor Lawrence real quick, and then we'll get into the other list the Texans showed up on. The NFL sent out a reminder yesterday about the schedule release next week. You know, schedule release, for those who don't know, is on Wednesday this coming week. They're going to start leaking out some games on Monday, like here and there. That happens every year. Yeah. Like, we'll probably know all the international games by the time the full schedule gets released on Wednesday. But the NFL sent out sort of like just a promotional email reminding us that the schedule release is next week, and you can watch it on ESPN and NFL Network and whatever. And the five players they had on the graphic – the five players they had on the graphic were Jalen Hurts, makes sense, Super Bowl MVP. Pat Mahomes, that makes sense, multiple Super Bowl MVPs. Josh Allen, actual regular season MVP. Jared Goff, okay, I'm fine with that. Been to a Super Bowl, almost got to another one with the Lions of all teams. And Trevor effing Lawrence, who's done nothing except engineer a comeback in a wild card round playoff game against the Chargers in his career. He's been a quarterback of a team twice now. He's been a quarterback for four seasons. Two of those seasons, the Jags have been picking in the top five in the draft.
Yeah.
That next draft. And one, they were picking number one, took Trayvon Walker. So
feels like that's a, you know what I that feels like? That feels like the league probably gets so many complaints from Jaguars fans about how they're undercovered or they don't get enough attention and what have you, that they throw them a bone every now and then on a non-consequential thing like
this. Dude, that just made it is non. You're right. Like, it, like of all the things to get worked up about, but we, like a little bit like I like when I see these graphics, I'm like, ooh, I wonder if CJ made it, and he didn't make it. I'm looking like, all right, no CJ, and then well, who is there? There's Goff and there's Allen and Mahomes. That makes sense. And well, hold on. This guy's not even the best quarterback in his own division, and he's on here. What the hell?
Probably still one of the more recognizable faces, though, just because of
not for good reasons,
because
it's an ugly freaking face.
They're good.
What? He's not a face man.
He also, though, because of his look, he does have, over time, he might transition into kind of look into some of my favorite people when I lived in Jacksonville that I would end up like just knowing from seeing him out and hang out with him every now and then were the weathered surfer carpenter look.
Oh.
Like it's a carpenter that's basically working just to, you know, to fund his surfing habit and whatever else goes along with it. But like they're weathered looking and they got a ponytail and long hair. They got a Marlboro in their mouth 24/7 except when they're surfing. And those guys were always super cool and fun to hang out
with. You could see Lawrence being one of those guys maybe eventually, like transition. Into that.
Once he starts looking more weathered, he's going to have like kind of a almost like an earthy vibe about him.
I could see him like up on like on the beach in Jacksonville, like a boat that's getting refurbished, and he's up on top of the deck up there with like a sander, like Andy Dufresne at the end of Shawshank Redemption kind of thing.
Well, that's the whole thing about a Jacksonville surf bum is that is one unambitious surf bum because it's, you know, it's, they got good waves and everything, but it's East Coast surfing and everything, but like they couldn't even be troubled to just drive their van out to California and fly their trade out there.
Right.
Or just go live in Mexico or something. They're settling for being a surf bum in Jacksonville. And that's what I loved about them.
It's like having a kid who's good at football. Like, no, we're just going to live in Connecticut. We could move to Texas, but we're just going to stay here in Rhode Island and play football.
Move to Canada. Do the opposite of John Metchie. Like, John Metchie moved to go to high school in America so he could play better football. Do the opposite. Go to Canada. I'm going to go play in Quebec.
Oh, I'm going to own Saskatchewan. The hell out. The other list the Texans show up on here, Seth, on NFL.com, they've got the best fit for remaining free agents. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the Texans are looking to bring anybody in, but hell, they brought back Foley Fatakasi 2 days ago, so who knows? The one free agent they've got on this list to the Texans, and I would be for this. You know that I've been looking to revamp that running back room, independent of Joe Mixon, for a while. Nick Chubb to the Texans. Nick Chubb, who I have been drawn in by his workout videos of late.
Well, yeah, I mean, ever since David Johnson came here, really, I've said what I really want is a 30-year-old running back who's barely played football in the last couple of years and has had multiple horrible injuries.
Fair.
That's what I really need to just put the cherry on top on all
I'm
of this.
I'm not saying to guarantee him $11 million like they did David Johnson, but if you can get Nick Chubb in on one of these cheapo deals, then I'd be intrigued by it at least.
The only issue I have there is that I do think the team is committed to giving it at least one last training camp with Damian Pierce.
I agree.
And seeing how they feel about it. Damian Pierce might end up getting traded at the end of this training camp, or he could be somebody that they feel like, Nick Cayley's system and scheme and everything else is going to be perfect for Damian Pierce. You draft a running back. Agumba Wale is still probably going to have a role on the team because of special teams. And I wonder if for all of the injury concerns and whatever the salary might be, I would be excited about Nick Chubb being on the team.
Yeah.
But I just don't know if it's probably not the right thing.
I don't think so either. I don't think it's happening. It's fun to think about, though.
And by the way, so he played 2 games in 2023, played 8 games last year, averaged 3.3 yards per attempt last year, and he'll be 30 years old.
Yeah, but you should see
year.
Him jump these hurdles from a standing position.
Yeah.
It's really incredible. You should really go. I'll find it and send it to you. You're totally going to change your tune when I send you this video, I'm sure. I'm positive.
Did you see, who was it? Amon Green. At the draft, he came out as he introduced somebody.
Yeah.
I was like, holy crap, he looks like he could still be playing football, well, from the waist up.
Yeah.
And then I saw that he was doing the old man workouts for his legs. He's very top heavy, but he's in really good shape.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was, but like, yeah, they're running backs tend to be freakishly genetically gifted, so I think Nick Chubb will still be doing workout videos like that.
You're right.
Doesn't mean that his knees are going to hold up in an NFL football
game. Be prepared for me gushing about him 10 years from now, Seth. Like, they should bring this guy in. That's funny. You didn't cross paths with Amon Green here. He came in the year after 2007, I think, is when he got here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My cross paths with Amon Green moment came in like 2010 or 2011. He signed with the CFL, and at that point, you know, Texan fans had a bad taste in their mouths about Amon Green because he came. It was a little Ed Reed like he Mike Sherman brought him in, similar to how Andre Johnson brought Ed Reed in. You know, like he's our guy, and we needed a running back, and he just never, you know, he couldn't stay healthy. He had, I believe there were some times where he was a little truculent with the media, that kind of stuff. So when he signed with Canada in like 2010 or 2011, I wrote kind of a snarky article about it in the Houston Press. Well, guess who I got an email from? Amon Green.
Amon Green?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like one of these like kind of what did I ever do to you kind of emails.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So we
Did you feel bad about it?
Well, a little bit. I mean, I feel bad anytime I hurt somebody's feelings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, So I emailed him back. I said, you know, it's not personal. I'm just being, you know, being snarky about it or whatever.
Yeah.
And we came to an understanding. We laid our weapons down, you know, me and Amon Green. So it was
running
it was
backs cool. are like they're my, you know, the defensive back room in terms of personality is my favorite room on a football team.
Yeah.
Running backs are the guys that I always admire the most just for their freakish athleticism. And like more so than wide receivers or anything, just because running backs are so strong. Mm-hmm. Like it's so often you see a running back just messing around in the weight room, power cleaning like 500 pounds or something absurd. You know, or just squatting three times their body weight, and they're not even looking like they're still being careful in doing it. They're not even really testing themselves because they got to be careful with their joints and everything. Their strength to body weight is so freakishly strong.
John Harris, I was with Johnny the day that Damian Pierce got drafted. We were doing day three of the draft, and Pierce was picked in the fourth round. So Johnny and I are doing Texans radio together, and they picked Damian Pierce, and Johnny, like he does with a lot of the picks, not to the degree he did with Woody Marks this time around, but did get super excited about Damian Pierce and immediately told the story of Pierce. It must have been at the Combine. That Pierce walked over to the 225 drill where you got to bench. How many times can you bench press? Is it 225?
Yeah.
How many times?
225. Yeah.
225. And Damian Pierce sat down with slides on his feet. Just like walked over, sat down, and banged out like whatever a massive number of it is. Like in slides, he's doing banged out, dropped, you know, put the weight down and walked away.
That's, you know, it used to be like that. They said. Jermani Dawson, the center for the Steelers.
Oh yeah.
Was very careful about, he was freakishly gifted athletically. He was such a pain in the ass to play against.
Yeah.
But he also, as an older guy, you know, he's very careful with how he worked out and everything. Didn't even really use free weights a lot, but then every now and then guys would be like, he wouldn't do the bench at all. He'd use all machines and everything. But guys would be on the bench press and just ask him to just try what he had. And he would just get underneath it and just, you know, rep out 455 like it was no big deal and rack it.
That's crazy. That is crazy. We have some people on the text page, Seth. We were talking earlier about the infrared saunas.
Yeah.
That you can get memberships to here locally. The owner of one of the local ones here, Beam, listens to the show. Kenneth, we appreciate you. There's people suggesting, he invited you to come give it a try. There's people suggesting that you and I should try doing our show from an infrared sauna at some point.
Oh, no way.
Several people. You know, they're
trying
to kill
us. No, I've done infrared sauna.
4 hours in an infrared sauna?
They do have a lot of documented health benefits. It's supposed to be really, really good for you. I'm not pooing on that at all.
Right.
But I don't like, I got, my tolerance for heat is very limited. You see me at training camp.
Yes. Yes.
Remember last year, I passed out in I almost died twice during training camp last year.
Yeah.
Once when I got hit by a parking garage arm, it just came down on my head, like the machines
right across
were taking
the street.
Over.
Yeah.
And then the other time when I got up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night and passed out three times,
crashed.
I was dehydrated.
Yeah. That was during training camp. You should. You know what we should see if we can get for you. They didn't have that big cool zone box when you were a player. You know that almost looks like a trailer. If you've been out to training camp, you've seen it. It's right behind the end zone on one of the practice fields. They've got what looks to be like a trailer, and you'll see players go into it during drills or in between drills. They'll go in, and it's like 40 degrees inside there. It's crazy cold inside there. They let the media do it like once every training camp, and I just never want to get out. It's so hot outside. They should give a special dispensation to former players that allow you to use that cool box anytime you want to.
I can go in there, and then I'll be in there, and the players will come in, and I'll be like, hey, fellas, how you doing?
What's going on? Do you need any advice?
I'll tell them how I did it back in my day.
Right. Oh, totally, dude. Yeah.
You guys, I don't see you guys using the forearm shiver enough.
Right.
Why are you not delivering a hard forearm shiver?
And then, and then if they're not listening, you tell them to get off of your porch for sure. Yes.
Yeah.
I think they should give you an exemption, a former player exemption. It's for your health, if nothing else. Like you said, you crashed 3 times.
Yeah.
You could have suffered a serious head injury.
We used to set up in a different spot during training camp, and before practice would start, I would sneak in there during commercial breaks sometimes. Yeah. It is nice. It just cools your body temperature
beautiful.
Down.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's great. It's great.
But I haven't been in it a couple of years. They got to clean the hell out of that thing to keep it from getting moldy.
Oh, I know.
Because you turn it off at the end of the morning and all that condensation starts working.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'll have to examine it for mold before I go in there.
Okay. You're saying that now when you're sitting in 69 degree air conditioning. I guarantee if it's 95 degrees, you'll be like, I'll be like, Seth, where are you going? You're like, the cool box. And I'll say, what about the mold? And you'll be like, what mold? And you're like,
everybody dies, Sean.
Right. Sleep when dead. Yeah. All right. I like when listeners do this, asking us for advice. My girl says I'm bad at deep conversations. How do I improve in this area?
Oh, okay. Typically, the first problem is the listening part of the conversation.
Yes.
One of the best things I ever learned early in life, and it was from the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people read that book and they think it's a business book, but the interpersonal advice is very, very good in it. The biggest thing that people do when having conversations or when they're with somebody and there's like maybe that person has an issue in their life or something is that we're way too quick to give advice. And the analogy is like if a doctor wrote you a prescription without actually listening to your symptoms first.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that us men especially struggle with sometimes is that we want to fix stuff. You got to listen first, and you'll be amazed. I swear to you, young man asking for advice on deep conversation, you'll be amazed how many times you end up giving people the perfect advice without saying anything at all, just by listening to a person. And you want to do it. This is the key. You got to do it empathetically. When somebody like your girlfriend says like, oh, I'm so frustrated at work because Sarah is such a C word. And you're like, so don't be like, don't say like, well, this is what you got to do to Sarah. Say like, reframe what she said to you to let her know you're listening and saying like, oh, so it's really getting to you, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and just so she feels heard.
Yeah.
And like, yes, I expressed that I'm frustrated. And you say, okay, so what's going on?
Yeah.
And then she tells you about how Sarah ate her lunch, stole your girlfriend's lunch or something that day.
And then
instead of being like, oh, that's wrong, why you got to do this? Again, just say like, oh my gosh, what was that? Like, how did that make you feel?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it sounds like, boy, that's got to be frustrating. Yeah.
It's a classic sales tactic right there.
Well, that's the problem is that like, that's the first level of it is like, you've got your canned responses.
Yeah.
You got to genuinely try to feel it. Like that's the next step is don't just give the canned responses. Just try to really put yourself in her position and what she's feeling and everything. And I'm going to tell you another thing, young man. It's work.
Yeah.
It's work. Yeah. It doesn't, you gotta train yourself to be an empathetic listener.
Well, and if you're if you're making an effort to improve at it, I would just say each day, wake up and think about 3 or 4 things that are worth having a deep conversation about with her. You know what I mean? At that very basic level.
Well, if she's saying that you struggle with deep conversation, I'm just guessing. And this is me being like, this is me doing exactly what I warned or cautioned against, but I'm not having a conversation here.
Yeah.
It's that, The first seek to understand. That's one of the mantras of that book. First seek to understand.
Yeah.
And that honestly, the most important thing about being a good conversationalist is being a good listener. Yeah. First and foremost, 100% in business, in football, in romantic relationships, the most important thing that sets people apart in being a good conversationalist, it's not about having funny quips or being entertaining or anything. It's listen. Do more listening than talking.
Yeah, see, I'm projecting because he says I'm bad at deep conversations. So you're right. You're answering the question. I'm projecting because I'm not bad at deep conversations. I just refrain from having a lot of them. And I think I'm guessing that I know that that's a frustration with Amy is my lack of being present at times because a lot of times I'm working on the show or I'm focused on, I'm never focused on like anything nefarious. It's all stuff that is productive, but it's like there's a wall sometimes. So I'm projecting the lack of desire, my not having those conversations with, I'm conflating it with being bad at it.
And then there also might be the other part of it. It's like, I don't know, maybe you guys aren't a good fit.
Yeah, here's my advice. There's a lot of fish in the sea. How you like them apples? Yeah.
You got to find somebody that's on the same part of the autism spectrum as you.
There you go.
So like wherever you are on the autism spectrum, some of us are a little further over to the less sociable side of things.
Right.
Find yourself somebody whose idea of a perfect day is sitting quietly in a room with somebody ignoring each other. You know, sometimes that's the answer.
That can last for 60 years.
Yes, but it's got to be the right fit and the right
for
match.
Sure. And you got to like watching the same things on television.
That may
be the only thing you need to have in common is some TV shows and what you want to DoorDash. That's it.
But first, if you want to give it the old college try with your current girlfriend, I promise you this. Yeah. I promise you this. Any young men listening right now, you will be amazed if you take a month to just focus on being a better listener. Watch a couple YouTube videos about empathetic listening or what have you. And you will be amazed at how great people think you are in conversation, B, how much you respect those people, and C, oftentimes without actually giving any advice at all, you'll be credited for giving great advice.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people just need a sounding board to think their way through in a safe place.
Right.
And I do this with Brandy all the time. I'll go in and I'll talk to her nonstop for 10 minutes about something I'm upset about. And then at the end of 10 minutes, I'll be like, thank you, Brandy. That is exactly what I need to do.
There you go.
And she takes the credit.
There you go. Yeah,
I taught her to do that. Yeah.
You're the one, that's all great advice. The one wrinkle I would add to it is if you're going to watch YouTubes on listening, Do it when you're by yourself. Don't do it while you're in the same room with your significant other because she's going to be trying to talk, or he, trying to talk, and they're going to be like, are you even listening to me? No, I'm watching YouTubes about listening to you, okay?
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So do it on your own time so that you can then exercise those skills in a conversation.
Well, that's a really good point because that's another part of it is just the whole be where your feet are part of it. Like, if you're going to commit to being a good listener, that means that you gotta push those intrusive thoughts
about your
to-do list and everything else out of there.
And just
focus,
Don't host a sports talk radio show, all right? Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast. Good advice, Seth. Good job. Way better job than me on that one. Text in advice. The listener was actually saying, can you put this out there to the listeners as well?
Okay.
This guy's looking hardcore for advice. So, yeah. So
there's an old story. I can't remember who it was. It was a woman who was asked about two different famous people that she had friendships with. And she said, this guy, person A, whenever I talk to him, I feel like he's the most fascinating person in the world. But whenever I talk to person B, I feel like I'm the most fascinating person in the world.
Yeah. A little Maya Angelou action there. How do they make you feel? Make you feel? All right. I love college football as much as anybody. I don't know that I want what is being discussed right now in college football. We will get to that coming up next.